Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Hi, hello. We are here. I am happy to be here, excited to be here. Shout out to all you dunkers. Thank you once again for embracing your bounce. I have found the energy. I am here in the pursuit of slappiness.
Okay. This is the second. Okay. Well, pursuit of slappiness. This is insane.
Shout out to whoever I had jet that from. I don't know how to credit. Not a journalist.
Not a You got it. How was the weekend, good sir?
It existed. How was yours?
You know what? Fine. Pretty solid. A good weekend of gaming. Nice to turn my brain off for a little bit. So that was fun.
Oh, yeah. Got your vibe on. Didn't get the advertised Cowboys game on the Twitch stream, but that's all right. We'll talk about it later.
See, here's the thing. You came in late is the issue. You came in during game number two. The first game was the Cowboy game, so.
Oh, I don't know how to work it. No, just click the button.
It's fine. I appreciate your support. Full disclosure, pull the curtain back. I was on Twitch over the weekend streaming NFL head coach running a season with the Houston Texans. Matt Leinart's MVP season is almost here. It's a great time to be alive. But anyway.
All right. March Madness. The madness is here. The madness is all over the place. I know we're going to talk about the league here in a second, but any tourney thoughts?
Yes. UConn has advanced to their 14th straight Final Four. Thanks to a ridiculous second half / overtime with an S. Performance from Paige Beckers, AZ Foot making big shots, Kristen Williams making big shots, the whole team missing free throws until they didn't, but they still did, and also fouling three-point shooters, and also giving up corner threes with 0.8 of a second left to send games at over. It, very exciting game, but also a very frustrating game. Very muggy through the first 3.5 quarters of that game. A lot of post-ups, NC State brought it. But man, Paige is so good.
Have you seen an evolution? Is she where you thought she would be on the return? What are your thoughts?
I would say not much different in my eyes. Like, it still feels very much like she picks her spots early in games and then turns up. I didn't expect this type of turn up for her. But the reads and pick and roll were there. Very patient. And once the pull-up got going, it kind of didn't matter what NC State did at a certain point. She was just draining pull-ups out of nowhere. Like, it was weird watching them defend her in ball screens because they would UConn run like some decoy action to start. They would, like, show high against her in the retreat. And then they'd play drop with her defender dropping under, ducking under the screen. I'm just like, why would you ever do that against Paige? Like, even if you get the recovery, you give her a sliver of space, she's just going to drain it. And then once she got hot in the fourth quarter, it was cooked. And then we got to the overtime, she literally didn't miss. And it's just like, at some point, like, just blitz her, get the ball out of her hands. It's not like, I don't know. It was a little bit bizarre.
You know what's bizarre?
What's bizarre?
So I've been on this earth for 35 years. Mm-hmm. Stanford has made it to the tournament like all the time, right? Mm-hmm. 14 Final Fours. That's insane.
Yeah, that's a wild streak.
I think they might do it.
Think Stanford's going to take it?
I think they might on the low. Were you impressed by South Carolina?
Yeah, they didn't have to. They didn't have to do Creighton like that.
Hey, Creighton was scrappy, man. Ran through Iowa and Iowa State and then just
ran to the buzzsaw.
Yep. Didn't have it. I thought maybe they could hang around, make some shots. Nope. Couldn't get her done.
They had no answers. Quick shout out again to Leah Boston, National Player of the Year, soon come.
But okay, spicy. I like it. It's always a shame when the Cinderellas eventually do the thing. North Carolina came out and said, bye, St. Peter's.
RIP St. Peter's. Enjoyed watching you play modern basketball and do cool stuff on offense.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. Kendrick Perkins on March 25th. If St. Peter's togetherness and commitment to each other is probably the most inspiring thing I've seen in basketball in a long time. That agenda-free basketball is just a beautiful thing to watch. Carry on, dot, dot, dot.
You pulled the rug from under me, hit me with hashtag Big Agenda, pulled up the tweet that says agendaless basketball. I feel like I just got crushed by a screen that no one called out.
What's the key to Spain pick and roll? Is it the first screen or the second screen?
Wow. Wow. I am flummoxed. Okay. Got that out of the way early. That's insane. Using the St. Peter's love against me. That's unfair. Anyway, are you hyped for Duke UNC? Coming up later in the week.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I know Coach K wants that one bad. He's not going to come into my house and ruin my last game. It feels like a Duke year. I'm not going to lie, y'all.
They have... Is it fair to call Paolo the best player in college basketball? Because he's been having himself one heck of a tournament.
He's pretty good.
He's fun. Passing flashes are there, getting downhill. Is the jumpers there too? Like, I don't know what you do with them on offense. Just a walking mismatch. Put the ball in his hands, let him work.
Someone said he had Rui Hachimura vibes. I didn't know what to do.
I mean, I would assume they mean the good parts. I wish Rui could pass like that. Or map out the floor like that, period. I guess that would be the... All right, we're not going to do Rui slander. Let's move into some NBA talk, shall we?
I told the guys I was going to ruin the pod tonight. I'm off to a flying start.
You are a 12-0 run to start the first quarter. This is incredible. So what we wanted to do with this podcast, there were a lot of games over the weekend that had playoff or play-in implications. So I thought it would be cool to kind of go over some of those games from the weekend and then zoom out and see what's going on with these teams. So let's start with some play-in teams. And we can kick off with the game that we were actually talking about during that Twitch stream that I held on Saturday. Spurs-Pelicans doing the thing. We're recording late on a Monday night right now. The Spurs are currently playing the Houston Rockets. I'm not sure what the results of that is. But anyway, heading into Monday's action, the Spurs had won 3 in a row. Nearly a plus 18 net rating in those games. They beat the Pelicans 107-103. Nice comeback victory. Before we get started, though, can we talk about halftime of that game?
Yes, Les. Baby race?
The baby race. There were like 47 babies. Immediately called it a scam.
Man, they came out with 14 different children in 30 seconds, and then more kept coming. I'm like, how is this even going to be measured? And then I saw that there was a pack and play on the line, and shout out to all you dunker dads. If you know about it, you know about it. But then the results of that are still under question. I took a screenshot on my phone of how far that baby was ahead. Mm-hmm. And just, folks, just want you to picture, there's one section of parents, there's another section of parents, I believe. And they're like evenly displaced half courts, like the middle. Baby number one was at the finish line. Legit a crawl and a half. And they've got the zoom in on baby number one. And all of a sudden, baby number two comes out of nowhere and wins. And when you pull it back, I'll try and find the screenshot and throw it to the folks. It doesn't make any sense. But this baby's near the start. And I saw the dad had some of the good snacks. And I'm calling shenanigans on that whole race.
What do you think happened? Did Did someone carry the baby to the finish line off camera?
Nah, I think they put them snacks out there. I think they laid them snacks, laid a little trail.
Is that against the rules?
Of life? No. Baby races? Yes.
I see. What is proper etiquette for baby racing? Is it just...
Smile, giggle, make baby noises, clap for your child, likely confuse them.
That's always my favorite part of baby race. Because, like, if you have 10 babies, like, maybe three of them actually start when the race starts. And then of those three, there's always one that actually, like what happened in this race, that actually takes it nearly the distance.
It's all about the momentum. If one gets momentum, it's a wrap. I always just love the ones that say, you know what, I'm not really doing this. And they just look around.
Just happy to be here.
So I don't know what's happening, but this is a vibe. Speaking of vibes, is it the Spurs offense or the defense for you?
Like, the offense is leading the dance, but even then, the offense seems weird to me. Like, I've enjoyed the smooth driving of DeJounte. I've enjoyed Keldon Johnson now mixing in those powerful drives with little push shots and also taking threes more willingly. Jakob Poeltl becoming like a legit post hub is a development that I did not expect to see this season. And so, like, they're doing cool things, and then it gets into the last 4 or 5 minutes of a game, and it's like, okay, what exactly is going on here? I mean, you get to see what the issue with the Spurs team is, where it's like you have a lot of solid to good players, but you don't have a bucket getter of the purest sense. And then it turns into mismatch hunting.
Well, I like the Spurs team because it's just a weird mashup of different concepts. Because in theory, you're thinking, okay, they're going to have some ball movement. They're going to execute you to death, which they do at times. Then they also will play small. But then they also will play two bigs. But they will also just ferociously drive for 20 consecutive seconds until you help or they get a layup. And it's a really weird dynamic as far as how they're going to beat you and when they're going to do it. Because in theory, you got Keldon, you got Primo putting his head down. You got DeJounte putting his head down. Keldon Johnson's aggression has been fun to watch as far as, you know what? Why not shoot some threes? Let's just throw it out there a little bit. I feel like DeJounte's been good all season, and the offense has been there, just probably not in the way that most people thought would happen. And then defensively, can they string enough together to give them some easier looks?
And that's kind of the thing where I'm just like, I don't know what I'm getting on a night-to-night basis for the defense.
I don't think they know either, but they're the last team standing as far as 11 goes.
Not banking on Portland making the late push, huh?
Portland made their push, and then the push went away. I don't know what happened with Sacramento, but that ended quickly.
That it did.
It's gonna be the thing that someone tweets about in like 4 years. Sabonis Fox was a problem because they were for like 4 games. Then it was just post-ups. So do you think the Spurs can make this move? Or is this just we played the right teams at the right time?
It's weird. Like, this feels more like a Laker question than a Spurs question. Because they are a game back of 10 right now. Last tweet I saw earlier today was that LeBron was doubtful for the game against the Mavericks. And if they don't have LeBron for that game, Russ can do it. But I don't know if I would bet on that. The Lakers have a really tough closing schedule, too. I don't know.
Aren't all the Lakers games down the stretch on national TV?
Unfortunately.
Sounds familiar.
This does seem oddly familiar.
Sounds like a familiar take. Lakers at Dallas, at Utah, versus New Orleans, versus Denver, at Phoenix, at Golden State, versus Oklahoma City. There's a win. At Denver. What a weird year for the Lakers. Because they've been really good for stretches and immediately giving it right back.
Kind of like the Pelicans game.
Oh, I mean, but it's to the point where you know that, okay, it looks like they're about to drop the leg, and then you know, no, they're not. And immediately here comes New Orleans. It's like, ah, y'all just did this against Washington.
But what do you do with, I guess while we're here, like, how do you feel about New Orleans right now? I'm glad Brandon Ingram's finally back. Goodness.
I'm just glad they're healthy.
Yeah.
The San Antonio game was a little bit weird as far as how that went, but I still think they're a fun bunch. Now, this road trip is going to be tricky, even though it's at Portland, at Lakers, at Clippers, at Sacramento. It's not the easy stretch.
They got the offense for it.
That they do, which is very fun. Very fun. Are you aboard that? Like, I'm trying to delay the inevitable Wolves talk here.
What? Why are you delaying the Wolves talk?
Okay, let's get into them. I know you're excited. Let's get into the Wolves talk. Clippers, Paul George. We'll talk about y'all later. Let's dive right into the Wolves.
Paul George practicing, upgraded to questionable. He may be back very soon. I'm excited.
Who the Clippers need an offensive hope. Who they play next?
They are playing the
Utah Jazz. Playing
the Jazz. Yeah.
He's coming back to play redacted. I see. All right.
You found the angle. Then they have the Bulls on Thursday. So, I mean, if things go well, we might see Paul George at some point this week. If not against Utah, then against Chicago, that'd be fun.
It'd be interesting to see Clippers with a raised ceiling here down the stretch. What do you make of the Wolves week they just had?
Weird, which is the easy way to go about it. I found myself, again, focusing in on their defense, because it is a very boom or bust style to go with when they play this aggressively. And when it works well, you get the game against Dallas that they won, in which they can force the ball out of Luka's hands a little bit. Obviously, he's going to dot you up some, but you force it out of his hands. You kind of dictate the flow that way. If your rotation is on point, you can force Dallas late into the clock. Then you can get out and run or just get into some early offense stuff, and then you flow from there. And then there are the games like the Phoenix game, particularly that second half, where they're going down the court knowing, okay, this is what Minnesota wants to do. These are the matchups that they want to give us. We can kind of manipulate this how we want to. And so you go fourth quarter of that Phoenix game, and they're just running Spain to force a switch and then going into a pick and roll. And DeAndre Ayton is just feasting in short roll against small guards. It's just like, well, what is the counter to that exactly? Boston kind of did the same thing.
And so what's your overall concern? Is it the scheme? Is it the need for help? What's the problem going into the playoffs? Because in theory, this is a team that could bother you. They're active. They're long. They're athletic. They can be creative matchup-wise if they need to be. Mm-hmm. They can help rotate, recover, play in the passing lanes. Beverly and Vanderbilt are pest-ish. But they also can be leaky if it's two on the ball or they have to help all the time. Mm-hmm. Are you in between or where are you at?
I think we both know what the scheme is and what the strengths of and limitations of that scheme is. I think for me now, I'm just kind of like, what are the matchups? Because from my eye, like, it seems like things are better when Anthony Edwards is taking on, like, the tougher on-ball assignments versus Jared Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's a better defender, but you kind of need his length and ability to clean up messes and his ability to rebound as, like, the low man if you're going to play that aggressively. And so I go back to both of the games against Dallas this past week. And when you have those possessions, Anthony Edwards can be sturdy on ball when he's locked in. Very strong dude, moves well laterally, can get into Luka's jersey a little bit. But then behind that, if you get Luka making that pass to Dwight Powell on the short roll or whatever, behind that is Vanderbilt roaming. It's D'Angelo Russell directing traffic. It's Patrick Beverly flying around too, can get in for strips, can get in to draw charges, just be pesky, things of that nature. And then there are the possessions where you have Vanderbilt on Luka, which again, Vanderbilt's a better defender, but behind that is just a bunch of small guys. And so I just wonder, like, I think my take is like Anthony Edwards might be the most important piece to their defense within a playoff context.
Important how though?
Important because I think his ability to take on those assignments can allow Minnesota to play the best version of their scheme. Because I do still think like them playing drop is a problem. And I don't think they had the personnel to go full-blown switch heavy.
Well, we saw them put Edwards on Booker in that Phoenix game. So I'm just going to counter and wonder this. How much does the matchup matter if the scheme isn't what it needs to be?
I mean, only so far. I think that you just get into the inherent limitations of the scheme at that point.
I do think his defense is going to be very important because that allows Beverly to take X and Vanderbilt to take either one of the big you want to maybe take away action or the person you want to help off of. Mm-hmm. And so if you have him and Russell helping with Edwards active, now the question is how much do you trust Edwards to do that consistently? I think on ball with the ball in his hands, that's fine. But if you get into off ball actions, does that hurt you?
And that's where I'm kind of like, maybe it would be better to just get him on ball because you limit some of those lapses that he has off ball. Because he can get lost in switches. He can get lost if he's a low man or he's tasked with splitting. It could be problematic if he falls asleep or if he ball watches. If you have him on ball and you're engaging him that way, it limits that. And you also have better guys off ball to kind of clean up behind that.
No, it'll be interesting to see how they adjust and what they do because it kind of reminds me of the Denver issue at one point in time in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Where you knew Jokic was going to be at the level, you knew the defense was going to be active. It could look really rough for a few games, and then they figure it out, and now they look really good defensively. So it's just, can Minnesota hold strong enough, and do they have enough scheme versatility to mix in maybe a drop, maybe mix the matchups up to get some switches in there? But they have a good base. Now the question is, how much is that going to matter depending on who they face? Who's their best matchup for them? I think I got laughed at when I said Memphis.
It might be Memphis. Because I will say, even going back to that Phoenix game, like the defense looked better when you have like a guy like Torrey Craig on the court. To where you're already playing aggressive, you already have to zone up. But if you have a non-shooter out there, it makes those responsibilities a little bit simpler. And I think if you're playing Memphis, you will have more opportunities to shade off of a non-shooter. And so maybe that gives them a little bit more leeway defensively. Like offensively, I think they can score with the best of them, especially when they get rolling. So that might be the best matchup. How would you feel about, well, at this point, Memphis pretty much has the 2 seed locked up, I think. I was about to say, like, if Golden State could pull together somehow and take 2, like, what would that look like for you?
I wouldn't like that for Minnesota.
Okay.
That's a lot of help. That's a lot of movement. It's a lot of pressure that can be put on the ball. I don't like that in a playoff setting.
I got you.
Catch them on a Tuesday or Wednesday, I think it's different as they displayed. I think didn't they beat them last time they played? But I don't know if that's what you want to have to focus in on and pressure on all the time. The reason why I say Memphis is because in theory, at the level can probably be something you could do consistently. At the very least, feel comfortable with, okay, Ja's not turning the corner every time. So that'd probably be my take on it. But do you feel better about their offense?
Generally, yeah. I do feel a little bit better. I've really enjoyed Cat post All-Star break. We already know what the shooting is. We know what the post-ups is. The drives from Cat have been incredibly fun. He is dusting dudes off the bounce. He is getting to the line now. Just the level of craft that he shows on the drives, it's been a lot of fun watching him there. And Minnesota is able to flow off of that. You get Anthony Edwards playing off of that attention that he draws. You have D'Angelo Russell playing off of that. You have Malik Beasley just bombing threes. You have Patrick Beverley just kind of filling the gaps. You have Jared Vanderbilt flying around with cuts. And it's helpful now that Cat isn't slinging the ball across the lot with these over-the-head hook passes all the time now. The passes seem a little bit more refined, a little bit more patient, a little bit more disciplined. That's helping the offense hum. They do hit these lows when he hits the bench, though, where I get a little concerned. It's a lot of Jalen Noel. It's a lot of Nas Reed trying to do stuff. And in those lineups where you have like Anthony Edwards trying to lead the dance, I kind of worry about what the direction of the offense is sometimes, because it feels like when the second unit is flowing, it's just a lot of tough shot making versus we're bending the defense and making them rotate and then getting good fluid shots out of that. But when they had the best guys on the court, like, again, they can generate good looks with the best with the best of them.
It's fair. I guess the question would be, do they have enough of a base for me? So what's it like when a game plan and defense locks in on Cat? Who's going to step up after that? Can you get enough of a flow to get Edwards and Russell going outside of it? Are they going to do the thing where they look like they're about to ISO and then kick to each other? Like, which version are we going to get? Because we've seen them execute cuts and movement and play with pace and play with tempo. We've also seen them bog down. And the playoffs is about execution and consistency, especially when these teams know what you're trying to do, especially when these teams are gearing their matchups towards taking that away, not even just their scheme. So, you know, are you at the level where you can now counter those counters and be able to punch back and swing back? So I think they have a great energy about them. They clearly have a belief that they play with, but that Phoenix game kind of showed, and we can punch you in the chin real quick.
Yeah.
Show you what playoff basketball is, and then what you got. Yeah. Clapping don't hit the same.
It just how executed them to death. I'll flip this Wolves question to you.
Side note, before you flip that question, Phoenix's little backbreaker run they've been on here recently. Goodness gracious. It's been just a run of, hey, we're here. And this game's over. Like an upgrade of, hey, we can compete every night. Like, no, we're taking this one. Minnesota, give me this game. Denver, you two. Philadelphia, you two.
Oh, man. We're going to talk about the Philly game a little bit later, but yeah. Phoenix. What? What did I do? What did I do now?
This is a great game of basketball. What was that Wolves question you had?
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you, how important do you feel like Jaden McDaniels is going to be whenever he returns? Does he do anything? Has he moved the needle for you in terms of their ceiling?
Oh, yeah, he moves the needle to me defensively for them. But then it goes back to the lineup questions for me. But I've had those questions with Minnesota all year. So I may not be the leading expert there. I think they're at their best when they have a blend and are able to hit both ends. I don't like when they go all defense for whatever reason. It doesn't look the same. And then now it makes their offense look a little bit different. So he's a very key piece, though. There's no way you can take that away from him.
Yeah. And he was starting to make some steps offensively, like more aggression. The shot was coming along. The drives were starting to hit a little bit different. Like, he was doing more to beat rotating defenses, which was helpful. And then, to your point, the defense, he could take on some of those tougher on-ball assignments on the wing. And just the length, like, I think that's kind of what you really notice with him out. If Vanderbilt isn't on the floor, Minnesota gets small very quickly around the centers, obviously. So it would be nice to get him back. Be cool. They are, what, I think 3-3 in the six games since he's been down. And then that obviously includes that lost 3 or 4 stretch that we're talking about now. But I guess we shall see. Let's move to the Eastern Conference real quick. I did not watch the Hornets-Nuggets game from Monday. I was watching the UConn-NC State game. But if we're including that one, Charlotte has won 5 of their last 7 with the 118 offensive rating during that stretch. They are currently the 9 seed. They were the 8 seed heading into Monday's action after beating the Brooklyn Nets on Sunday. Brooklyn was on the second night of a back-to-back after completely demolishing Miami. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But the Hornets have been playing well as of late. What stood out to you over their recent stretch?
What stood out to you over their recent stretch?
LaMelo's on fire.
Oh, I did not see that coming. What's been the difference for you with LaMelo Ball during this stretch? I know you've had some questions about what he looks like at certain times against drop.
Yeah, like I would still like for him to solve the intermediate question for me. When the floater's going, like it turns into like, okay, what do you do with this guy? Because if the floater's going, more often than not, the three ball's also going. And if those things are going, he's getting downhill. Now he's slinging passes everywhere, and you really can't do anything against him. So that Brooklyn game on Sunday, we hit a point in the second quarter where I think it was like three of Charlotte's four offensive possessions early in that quarter where he just gets downhill and goes straight into a floater. And he drained the first two, missed the third one. It was like, okay, well, that's fine, though. He's taking what the defense is giving him. He's doing it in rhythm. He looks good, looks fluid. Like, if that's a shot he adds to his diet consistently, and again, that's going to open up things for him and open up things for everyone else. But he's just playing with a level of confidence. He always plays with confidence, but he's in his own right now. He's been bombing away from three during the stretch and knocking down threes at above a 40% clip, which is also nice. He's knocking them down off the bounce. He's knocking down off spot-ups when they do let the other guys like Terry Rozier run off into action for you. Defensively, it's been fun watching him fly around.
Quick note on their defense. I mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good.
But I noticed while I was watching pieces of this Denver-Charlotte game, they actually had a game plan. Mason Plumlee did a good job on Jokic, but they switched and would double. And I was like, huh, look at you, Charlotte, gearing up. Continue.
doing some things. No, it was going back to that Brooklyn game. It was fun to watch them like adjust in game. They came into it. They were dropping with Mason Plumlee, and then they would trap with Mason Plumlee, if Kyrie Irving was running the ball screen. They went into their zone in the second and third quarters. Like, they mixed in a bunch of different things defensively, and that's kind of how they have to piece it together. Like, this is similar to the conversation we had about them last season, to where it's like, okay, wait, how is this defense actually, like, below average to averages right now? And it's just James Borrego just throwing out whatever he can think of defensively, because there's only so much you can do with the personnel that he has. And so, like, that's been fun. But to that point, when Charlotte does ramp up the pressure with their ball screens and LaMelo gets to fly around off ball, like, that's when he's at his best. Like, he wants to gamble off ball. He does have good feel for playing the passing lanes. The questions for him off ball become when they're playing more conservatively, and he just kind of has to maintain help responsibilities, or when he is tasked with rotating in early and still keeping an eye on his guy. He can ball watch because, again, he wants to make plays. And that's when he gets cut. That's when guys relocate behind him, and it becomes a whole issue there. But, like, in the Brooklyn game in particular, like, he was pretty good defensively. I didn't have too many issues with him. And once he gets going, again, it opens everything else up. Miles Bridges had himself one heck of a game against Brooklyn. They went bully ball to start this game off, which was fun. And we'll talk Charlotte, but I do have a Brooklyn question for you. Like, how do you have, what kind of concern, what's your concern level with Brooklyn's size?
What do you mean?
Because they went with three guards plus KD and Drummond. And the way they configured the matchups, they basically started with Seth Curry on Miles Bridges. And they started with Seth Curry on PJ Washington, excuse me. And they immediately went hunting for him.
Well, I think with Brooklyn, they're just going to have to pick a person that we're going to have to live with if they face that kind of size. Mm-hmm. You know, just looking at the lineup configuration and assuming this is the way they're going to go going forward, KD is likely going to be in a help-ish role on paper. Bruce Brown's going to guard a perimeter player. Mm-hmm. Kyrie is probably going to guard the other that works. So Seth Curry kind of has to get the maybe matchup, which is how you land with him guarding PJ Washington. And, well, I think also the other thing is they did that last time they played Charlotte, now that I remember. Mm-hmm. I think that was the game they just trotted out four guards and were like, hey, let's have some fun.
And Kyrie had himself a day.
He did. But PJ, I think that was an adjustment because PJ Washington was just standing in the corner. And Seth Curry was like, cool, this is great. So I think James Rago is like, never again.
I respect that. But no. Miles Bridges just plays with a level of aggression. Were you about to say something?
I was going to say, the net size thing is probably going to be a question mark at some point. I just am not sure when. And also, I believe that may help them if they decide to double and those kind of things. But they're going to have to live with three of those guys playing at some point and two at max. But back to Miles Bridges.
Oh, I just like Miles Bridges, the power driver. He just bullies dudes. So I've enjoyed, like, it's just fun watching them get out and run. Like, if they can figure out defense stuff enough, they can fly around and transition. Like, that's kind of all they, not all they need, but it's kind of the East Coast version of the Memphis template, to where, like, they want their defensive activity to flow into their offense and build a boat that way.
Yes, without the consistent help defense, though, would probably be my counter. But yes, but I think it's right down to the Memphis template to the fourth quarter problems, which is weird because Charlotte is such a fun, dynamic team. They can shoot their way back into almost any game. You look at the bucket getters they have on this team. You got Rozier, Bridges, LaMelo, Kelly Oubre, Isaiah Thomas, Montrezl Harrell can get four dunks in 2 minutes. So they can heat up. The question becomes in the fourth quarter, where do you go? What do you do? How much do you miss Gordon Hayward there? What is your best lineup there? It seems like, okay, let's go small. But the problem is, while you have the bucket getters, they have to go get the buckets. And they don't necessarily have that person that's going to force the defense to bend. So, hey, we'll switch. And now it becomes, did Terry Rozier do stuff? Did Bridges do stuff? Did LaMelo do stuff? Oh, they did? Cool. Oh, they didn't? Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
And to that point, that's why they end up spamming these go screens at the end of games. Like, that's the only consistent way that they're able to move the defense a little bit, is try to get Terry Rozier off of movement.
They're so good at it, but they do it so much now. Like, almost any time Terry Rozier comes up, I'm like, he's popping to the wing. And, like, now the teams know it, because that used to be just money in the bank for him. Like, oh, here comes Terry Rozier. Oh, there goes Terry Rozier. And now it's just, okay, we're not falling for that. Or we'll just switch it early.
Yeah. I mean, if it works, it works. But teams definitely know what's coming. To that point, though, imagine my surprise when I get to, I think, the third quarter of that game, second quarter of that game, and Isaiah Thomas sets an inverted screen for Mason Plumlee, and Plumlee gets downhill and dunks on Andre Drummond. It's like, that
sounds like a great set, honestly.
That's a pretty nifty. Like, you use your guards as screeners, you know, get them down, get your bigs downhill. Didn't think that was going to be Mason Plumlee, but
a dual apology to Mason Plumlee and Isaiah Thomas. I like where this pod is going.
Hey, man, Isaiah Thomas earned a contract, and Mason Plumlee is doing his job as the center. What does that mean? What does the mean?
Very close to fair enough. side note, I enjoy any and all IT Terry Rozier minutes. It's my favorite thing, watching them drive and kick to each other. You never know when they're going to shoot or go to a floater or kick the ball. I want to see Charlotte just go nuts one day and just say, hey, LaMelo, Terry, IT, Kelly Oubre, and Bridges, y'all just go run around.
Oh, Jesus. I don't know how I'd feel about that.
Hey, why not? Let it fly one time. What happened to experimentation? Y'all sat here and experimentation me to death for 15 minutes last pod, and now y'all want to, I don't know about that. All right.
Oh, it's experimentation within. Oh, goodness. Bridges at the five, cool. If you got Isaiah and Terry Rozier and also LaMelo, like, that's a lot of, I would worry about the other end. That's my counter.
Hey, that's what that zone's for. That's what that zone's for, baby. Please let them get one run.
Man wants chaos. I respect it.
Yeah, we need more. Can they make a run? Can Charlotte or Atlanta make a run? Or are they just going to play each other in a fun game and then No.
Because here's my thing. Like, both of them have the three-point shooters to, like, make any one game interesting. And so, if I had to bet on it, like, I feel like it's going to be a fun game and play in between those two. And then they, well, I don't know. Because, like, right now it's Brooklyn in 8 and it's Cleveland in 7, which I just want Cleveland to get healthy, man. I feel so bad. I feel so bad for Cleveland. That just stinks. Dean Wade out for the year. Lauri Markkanen got hurt. Evan Mobley twisted the ankle. They're already without Colin Sexton. Like,
the all big lineup didn't work with no bigs.
Yeah, that would be a pretty big hangup with that. But right now, Cleveland's in 7, Brooklyn's in 8. So, like, you would imagine Brooklyn beats Cleveland in the first game. And then it would be Cleveland versus the winner of Charlotte and Atlanta. And if Cleveland's this hurt, like, this, there seems to be a window of opportunity for one of these teams to get in at 8. I don't know what that means for them in the first round, but.
I can already envision it. I can already envision it.
Go ahead.
One of these teams gets the 8 seed. I'm just thinking Charlotte, Atlanta. No offense, Cleveland. I still believe in you. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of all the 1 seed possibilities. If one of them beats Philadelphia in game 1, you're going to lose your mind.
I will say,
if one of them beats Miami in game 1, you're going to lose your mind. If one of them beats Milwaukee in game 1, the pod will be canceled.
Wait a minute. I'm not going to cancel the pod. Come on now. This is a professional podcast adventure. We can't do that. Not over bits and narratives, you know. We gotta.
I think it'll be fun. I think the play-in will still be fun. Brooklyn being in there is just a fun mix. But even then, even with Cleveland's injuries, I don't know if you really want to face them in a one-game scenario. Assuming they get to a level of health, because Lauri Markkanen is defending. Like, I want to go back and watch the film. I'm not gonna do it. But I want to see all the people he's been asked to guard. Because I'm looking up and this man is guarding Pascal Siakam sitting on the spin move. I'm like, hold on. Like, this is a real thing. What's your line? Society has progressed past making fun of Lauri Markkanen on defense.
Okay.
Nope. Is that my line?
Lori's done his thing. Like, I hope he's okay. I hope everyone in Cleveland's okay. For them to have the season that they've had and make the leap that they've made, for them to basically fall apart at the seams at the end because of injuries is just unfair. Like, you zoom out, this is still very much a successful season for them. But in the moment, it's just like, man, upper trajectory, injury, limp towards the play-in, despite being a 4-6 seed all year long.
But they battled all year. That's the bummer part. For me, it's just them battling and then not being able to see what it all means is, to me, the end product. But they keep fighting. Every time I turn them on, even with half their team out, it's a fight. You got to fight the Cavs.
Yeah, definitely it's an effort issue for them. It's just war of attrition, man. It just hit them at the wrong time. It's just unfortunate. Do we want to get into some contenders? Sorry for the segue, Cleveland.
Let's talk about the Suns.
Let's talk about the Suns, shall we? The Philly game was a very good basketball game, first and foremost. I was intrigued by the way they attacked late in the fourth quarter, because they just spammed and backpicked their way into matchups to get Harden and Embiid and pick and roll. And they just went after him over and over and over and over again. That was just fascinating to me. Also, Devin Booker is really good at basketball.
Devin Booker is very good at basketball. And the Suns are very good at basketball. Like, just, I feel like we've or at least I know I've been a broken record all year, but the way this team just has this mindset and the ability to adjust and just take what you do and turn it against you, it's just been such an impressive run. I felt like that was such a good back and forth game just from the mental aspect. Like, we've talked about it on this pod. Who's switching Harden, Embiid, pick and roll? Oh, Phoenix.
Phoenix. And they did, to that point, like, how do you feel? This is a Philly question, to be clear, but like, how do you feel about that balance between those two when there is a switch? Because I found myself kind of raising my brow at the amount of times that Harden got the switch and then Embiid's ready to post up. And Harden is like, no, I got it. Actually, let me take DeAndre Ayton. And Embiid retreats to the dunker spot and kind of chills. And it turns into a dribbling exhibition. And Harden either gets the shot or he doesn't and tries to force a pass late in the clock to someone. And like, I didn't see any visible frustration from Embiid. There was a possession in that game where like Tyrese Maxey's, he tosses his arms up and he's like, hey, what's going on here? Like, give it to the big fella, which I got a good cackle out of that one. But where are you at on that balance? Are you, has that popped up on your radar at all?
No, just because most teams haven't dared do it. So I think they needed to see the reps to understand. I think there were moments where you could see the vision of why teams don't do it. I think there were moments where James was going for the ISO and Embiid wasn't quite sure where to space in that dunker spot. So he might have been in the way of the drive. Because mm-hmm. technically, you know, if you line up on the same side as James, your man has to help, but that passing angle isn't quite the same. And I felt there were times where, you know, you would see them hit the post and Phoenix would have to help and you'd open up a three. And that's like, oh, that's why you guys don't do that. So I think it's more of just a timing, chemistry, get more of a look at it type deal than anything else. I mean, okay. I thought it was interesting that Phoenix had made James Harden guard Shamit. But yeah, back to Phoenix and just how good they've been. Like, do you find yourself running out of things to say? Because I'm in the space where their regular season has been so good that I'm not even like, let's say they do fall apart. There's no slander coming from me.
Like, I think the only thing that can stop them is poor health. And even with that, Devin Booker's missed time this year. DeAndre Ayton's missed time this year. Chris Paul has missed time this year. They've won 80% of the games. Cam Johnson is still out. And we talked about him not too long ago about the steps that he was making during the Paulist stretch. They're winning the title if they're relatively healthy. Like, we could get into the micro. Like, I've really enjoyed this DeAndre Ayton. I've enjoyed this DeAndre Ayton season, period. Shame on the Suns for not maxing that guy in the offseason.
Do you make the trade-off if you get this season, though?
Like, do we believe that they're getting this season because he doesn't have the money?
Hey, you never know.
I mean, I guess you don't know. But, like, we saw this during the postseason. Like, on one hand, I get the bet.
We didn't see this.
I mean, we saw him turn the corner in the second half of last season. And then throughout the postseason, it was the seals. It was the defensive activity. Like, you saw the outline of this. You're right. He has taken another step because he's shooting like 60% in floater range this year, which is just insane. What he's doing on the short roll is, we didn't see that last season. We saw glimpses, but now he's just nailing it. Going back to that Minnesota game we were referencing earlier. He shredded them. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, here's my big difference with Phoenix this season. So the execution was there last year. We can agree on that, right? Yes. It's the decision-making and the tempo they have in the half court. So even a possession to the Philly game, fourth quarter, you mentioned how much they ran Spain pick and roll. Philadelphia does a good job of sitting on it. The action's done. Plays out. They swing it to DeAndre Ayton. He's at the elbow. He swings it to Chris Paul. He goes right into another pick and roll. Before the defense can really fully recover, they're right back in the same danger zone. Yep. And that, to me, is the difference. Where, yes, we have our actions that can hurt you, and yes, we can execute. But if we don't, we are also going to continue to force you to guard. and keep putting pressure on you mm-hmm. in those ways. And that little step, I think, has been good. And, you know, it makes it tough to guard depending on what scheme you want to go with. Because, hey, we can hurt your switches. We can hurt you in drop. We can hurt you at the level. Now, it'll be interesting to see if there's a team that decides, hey, we're going to pick this poison. And we're going to take that versatility off the table for y'all. And you're just going to have to do this over and over again. But Phoenix has shown they can kind of do that. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, like they, like I want to be careful not to talk about them as like a perfect team because I mean, there are things to pick at, but you play drop against them. Chris Paul, Devin Booker are just going to pull up me to you to death. You switch against them. You've talked about this all year long about how good Mikal Bridges has gotten at slipping screens, particularly like early offense transition stuff. DeAndre Ayton is mashing switches now. Devin Booker would just shoot over the top of you if you have a small guy, if he has a small guy on him. And even if he doesn't, he will still shoot over the top of you. And Chris Paul can jab and rip through and annoy you and knock down contested pull-up jumpers still. Like the one thing that you can kind of test them out on is the blitzing. It's like statistically, they haven't been great at it this season. And then you once again go to the Minnesota game and they just blitz them in the second half of that game.
Yeah, it's got to be some scheme versatility. Let's see if I can bother Nikias here, folks. Is Chris Paul the weakest of the links in the big three?
Wow. Wow. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at Nikias. I think the answer is yes, because I think one, he is easily the player you have the most health concern with among that three. And beyond that, like, part of Phoenix flowing a little bit better offensively is this shift from Chris Paul being like full blown table setter this season and kind of letting Devin Booker flow from that. And as we've seen when Paul was out, Devin Booker can handle higher usage. DeAndre Ayton can handle higher usage. And so, like, again, I worry about Paul there defensively. Like, he's going to be the smallest guy in your lineup. So like, there's going to be some inherent mismatch honey that can go on there. Like, I don't think Paul's a bad defender, but you're 6 foot, like at a certain point, like that just kind of is what it is. So like, I think so, but that's also kind of what Phoenix wanted this year, right? Like you wanted to get to a point to where DeAndre Ayton could develop into that number two, like putting it within the context of the conversation we had last year and the paint issues that I was bringing up last year. You kind of needed Ayton to grow into the answer to that because Chris Paul doesn't get to the rim anymore. And he definitely doesn't get to the rim now. And aside from Booker, you needed someone else to be able to do that. And that's why the eye was kind of like on Ayton, on Mikal Bridges, like which one of you guys can develop enough to where you can supplement what Chris Paul doesn't bring in that area. And so now you get this from Ayton and it's like, okay, like if Chris Paul settles into number three, like you are cooking with something.
All right. So while we're going to the other side with the Suns, can a team put Ayton in a tough position in pick and roll? And can a team find the coverages to take Devin Booker out of rhythm? And if those two things happen, does it look different for Phoenix?
I'm trying to think of potential matchups for them. Like, who could junk up? I guess that's where you want to see what, if they get the Clippers in the first round, for instance. Like, that's going to be the test. That's going to be the case study for your questions, I feel like, especially if Paul George does come back and he's healthy. I don't think we're going to see Kawhi at this point. But if you do get Paul George back and you get the Clippers in the first round, Ty Lue is absolutely going to junk it up. You're going to see zone. You're going to see two to the ball on Devin Booker. Like, you're probably going to see Paul George on Devin Booker at some point. I think they'll be able to find some coverages that could bother those two.
Yeah, I think if you can make it tricky for Devin Booker and give him different looks and try and take him out of rhythm, whether it's a trap every now and then, go back to drop, throw some switches, just try and throw him off. And now you have the kind of guard that can make Ayton think twice and pick and roll. that's where it gets interesting. But I'm reaching for grasping for straws. That's what I'm trying to say. Just professional speaker into the microphone.
It's what we do here at the Dunker Spot, you know. Phoenix is just, they're so good, man. They are so good. Flipping this to the Philly side of this equation from that game, I already talked about like how they kind of got hunted, but that also brings me to the lineup thing that's been gnawing at me with Philly.
That's a Danny Green take, isn't it?
Matisse Thybulle was in foul trouble for a good portion of the game. And where was Danny exactly in that fourth?
Again, on the floor?
He was on the floor. But again, like, Phoenix was able to kind of dictate what matchups they wanted to go after, and there wasn't much to be done about it from Philly's side, didn't look like.
In which portion? What do you mean?
I mean, defensively. I think with Thybulle off the floor, like, they just went after it. Like, they were probably going to try to hunt out those kind of mismatches anyway. But without Thybulle on the floor to kind of fly around and help, at least, I feel like that kind of added to the problems that they had late in that game.
Well, I mean, you had Green on Booker, so I think what Phoenix basically did was say, hey, the rest of y'all got to figure this out, at least for a good stretch. Mm-hmm. And then they were able to play out of those pressure moments. And that's the tricky part when we get to this part of the season, because it's going to be individual matchup season, which is great until teams switch you out of those matchups or teams decide that's cool, you're going to stay in the corner. Everyone else has the guard. Mm-hmm. So that's where it gets a little trickier, because I thought Philadelphia did a pretty decent job with their personnel involved of defending the actions. It's just to play after the play.
Yeah.
And sustaining defense. And that's going to be the answer or the question for them down the stretch. Now, I don't know if you're going to face a team that executes at that level, mm-hmm. but again, defensively, you need Maxey and you need Harris to be at a certain level to allow the rest of it to make sense. And if you don't get that, you might run into some problems.
Am I overblowing? I came out of the game a little bit underwhelmed with Maxey defensively. Like, just for that specific, I think, especially when Phoenix would run like a guard screen, because they did a lot of that early in the first quarter, where they'd have Chris Paul screen for Devin Booker just to get the Maxey matchup and then flow into whatever ball screen they want to get into. And Tyrese Maxey, like, physically just couldn't hold up against Booker. And I wonder, like, is there a team in the East that could kind of pose similar issues there?
Well, that's going to be the thing. Because technically, if we're talking straight up and down, you need Maxey to be able to do ball pressure type things on whoever the one man is. Mm-hmm. So if I'm thinking the way that you're trying to present this, I mean, I guess you'd have to put Brooklyn in there. Just the threat of that could be interesting. Maybe a Chicago on paper. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee, depending on how you feel about Middleton. Boston, perhaps, but I think Philly could scheme their way out of that. Toronto, size-wise, I guess, could present that. So it's more like, I think it's, well, because here's the thing, his awareness in switching and covering actions is so important. You need his ball pressure. But once he does the switch and recovers, now you've kind of reversed out of what you were trying to do. You know what I mean? I think that's what Phoenix did that worked so well is, Philadelphia's had success when they are able to kind of line things up the way they want to. Like, hey, we got Harden on this guy who does this. Embiid's on the big. Maxey Harris, Danny or Matisse, y'all have y'all matchups. And now we can get out of it. And Phoenix said, that's great. We're going to make all y'all run around. And now we've flipped it to what we want. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the Eastern Conference has that kind of mindset. I think they have the guys who can punish Philadelphia, but I don't know if it's going to be in that same way.
I got you. And I guess that's part of my struggle I had with trying to zoom out from this game because Phoenix did very specific things. Again, like they were able to consistently get Harden and Embiid in action. And sometimes we saw Embiid play at the level. Sometimes we saw him in drop. Didn't really see switching from those two, but like we saw what kind of problems they could pose and stuff. But on the other hand, it's just like, okay, who in the Eastern Conference executes like Phoenix does? Nobody. So like how much of that can be replicated as consistently and or as efficiently as Phoenix does it? And so I'm just trying to balance like, okay, like this is a problem, but like how much of a problem is it going to be against like worse teams that Philly's going to face? Like, could they just be able to outlast some of these teams in the East if they try to get picked, if they try to pick on them in the same way that Phoenix did?
Do you feel better about Embiid and pick and roll?
I feel like I'm in the same place with Embiid and pick and roll. Like, I certainly don't feel worse about it. Because we know what he can do when he's fully engaged. Like, I'm going to annoy you, but like it's Gobert-esque when he's locked in. Like, teams don't even want to take shots in the paint against him. A lot of teams are driving, probing, let's pull it back out and hope they can force a late switch on him because they just don't want to challenge him in the room. So, like, he can be that menacing force. I think my question more with Embiid is more so like him in conjunction with Tobias Harris. What's that coverage going to look like? And that's more of a Tobias question than an Embiid question. What does him and Harden look like? To circle back to that conversation, like that's more of a Harden question than it is with Embiid. Because I think he's shown over the last year and a half, like when he's engaged, like he can play. He's very, very, very good in drop already. We know that. But like he can play to the level of the screen or a little bit below that if you ask him to do that. I think he wants more opportunities to do that, honestly, if you listen to him talk. But it's more so about the other guy.
Oh man. Speaking of the other guy, where are you at with the Heat?
Apparently beat the Kings tonight, so that helps.
Scored a whole bunch of points too. Let's hear the agenda.
Not the agenda.
Come on, you can't take the Sedano victory lap and question Jimmy Butler. You gotta pick one.
What do you Is this what we're on? That's incredible.
I didn't hear anything. What happened?
Yeah, okay. You got it. What's up? You got it. Well, before they beat Sacramento, they were riding a 4-game losing streak in which they held leads and lost them because they completely lost the plot in fourth quarters. And I think that starts with Jimmy Butler.
10 for 14 tonight, 27 points.
Did play well tonight. And haven't seen the game against the Kings yet, but he did play well. It does look like he played well. But in general, like he's had his struggles in clutch moments all season long. And I keep coming back to this particular issue. Like, what is the half-court creation going to look like for this team, particularly against good teams? And if Jimmy Butler isn't able to find a mismatch to pick on, and for, you know, force double teams or get to the free throw line against smaller guys, like I wonder, like how fluid is this going to be?
Well, let's define half court creation. Which part are you worried about? Because we've talked about different parts of different pieces of the season. Is it the ability to go get a bucket? Is it the ability to put two on the ball and put pressure on defenses and make them think? Mm-hmm. Is it the ability to score consistently, or is it the ability to just execute and move the ball and keep making decisions? Or is the issue that it's a rotating wheel?
The issue is that it's a rotating wheel because there are pockets where the Heat play with a little bit of pace in their half court. Like they can run some really beautiful stuff in the half court. It just seems like things really, really, really bog down in the fourth. And even in games in which they have the movement going for most of it, they'll get to the fourth and then it turns into an ISO fest. It turns into a mismatch hunting fest. And that isn't inherently a bad thing, circling back to the Friday pod. But when it doesn't work, there doesn't seem to be an adjustment from that. And I don't know how much of that is decision-making from the players on the floor, how much of that is Spo just saying like, hey, this is the regular season. Y'all need to be able to do this once we hit the postseason. Let's roll this out. We'll go through the rough stretches, whatever. And this just happens to be a rough stretch. But again, like Jimmy Butler versus length has been a problem this year. That's pretty consistent.
It feels like the blend is off for me.
Mm-hmm.
So Jimmy Butler and Bam post-ups are good. I don't know if they're stand around and watch good at this point. That's no disrespect to them as players. Mm-hmm. It's more, what does that do to the flow for Miami? And what does that do to the defense?
Mm-hmm.
And how much can you sit in a coach's meeting and say, you know what? We'll live with these two doing what they do. Like Milwaukee said last playoffs. And that's where the dynamic for me comes in with this Miami team. Because let's say Jimmy loses his mind and Bam loses his mind. What does it mean for the overall squad? But they need those two to be pluses on top of what they're doing. And part of this stretch for me has felt like that tempo is missing in the half court. They're not a team that can necessarily start all of their sets late in the clock and go straight to one action and then dump it and consistently get results. That can work if you have it going and now you can sustain for a little bit or grind it down a little bit, you know, like running the ball late in the game football-wise, all the analysis. But if that's going to be the main course, it feels like you're limiting yourself and you move more from mismatch hunting and this is what we want to do to the defense saying, hey, we're good with that. So it's for me, it's like, okay, we've seen what they can do when they're losing their mind shooting the ball. And we've seen them be able to create those looks. You know, it's not when they have those great shooting nights, it's not completely fluky. They're able to drive and kick, open those looks up. They have to be able to do that. They have to get defenses out of their base. They have to get defenses thinking. And they've got to be a moving target offensively. And so part of the issue when you talk about Jimmy Butler is what can he do to make defenses treat him better? And what is that going to look like as far as shot making goes? Is it just going to be him making shots and hoping the defense changes their mind? Because let's think about it. Jimmy and Bam in pick and roll is a what?
It's a switch. It's a switch or an under.
It's a switch, an under, or a drop.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, you got options. And there's no consistent read on what it's going to be every single time, especially as we get closer in the playoffs. There's more length. There's more size. So it's not like that's an automatic. Maybe Kyle Lowry's playing rope-a-dope, and this is going to be a flurry of pull-ups going left against drop coverage. Maybe it's Tyler Hero heating up. But they just need one piece to make the defense think. Like from my mind goes back to when they played Milwaukee. The game where, was it Tyler Hero had the turnover late? They had a lot of these similar issues offensively where it just didn't look like they were ready to shoot. Milwaukee was playing off of them. And then Miami got really aggressive. Shots started flowing, and now they got into their flow. That ball's moving. That ball's popping around. They're driving. They're kicking. Now whatever Jimmy and Bam do are a plus. Now we're hitting back. We're pushing what we need to do. You play a team like the Knicks, and your pace is bad. Your tempo is bad. Your process isn't quite where it needs to be as far as, you know, you don't need to take 10 seconds to set up the pick and roll, right? Now the ball stays on one side of the court. Like, if you want to end the possession with that, that's fine. But you've got to put pressure on the defense before getting to your flow, and now let those be plays that you're just kind of playing out of. So I think it's an important stretch for Miami to have before the playoffs mm-hmm. rather than be hot and now you face what happened in the playoffs last year.
All right. While we're here, like, how much of – because the offense has just been – it's highlighted late in games, obviously, but the offense has been kind of disjointed for a little bit now. How much do you attribute that to the rotation changing and guys getting reacclimated to roles or shifting roles?
Well, I think the lineups, it takes a toll on you, especially when this is a team that shifted and had to morph a few different times during the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a story for not just Miami, but league-wide. How many teams really have their base going right now? Like really feel like, hey, this is what we're going to do night in, night out. A lot of teams are still Phoenix, but a lot of teams are still searching, you know? Mm-hmm. And for Miami, it feels like they're still kind of searching lineup wise, rotation wise, fourth quarter wise. You know, by this time of the year, usually we know what teams' pet actions are, what they're trying to run. Other teams trying to take it away. I don't know if we know what Miami's is. Is it Kyle Lowry setting screens for Jimmy Butler? Is it Bam at the elbow? Like, we've seen different things different times. So I think a lot of it is just trying to get the rhythm and the flow and getting their blend back, because they have to have all those things going.
Like, it's funny how it kind of comes full circle with this Miami team, because, like, one of the things that I praised them for, as they've, you know, like, they've been around the one seed this year, is that, wow, they've had to shape shift a whole bunch. They've had to be the grinded out team. They've had to be the bombs away team. They've had to be the movement team. And now we get towards the end of the season, it's like, okay, how do we put this all together?
If only.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a great point. Someone should have thought of that a little bit earlier. But yeah, it's just a little funny that now they're hitting the stretch trying to put things together, and it just looks a little bit wonky right now.
But that's a league-wide thing. There's a lot of teams that are in that boat where they've had to figure things out, and now it's time to elevate and wait. What do we do? I look at Utah like a prime example, mm-hmm. where teams are just saying, Rudy, we're just going to switch. And you know what? This drop seems like a good idea. Mike and Donovan, y'all create whatever y'all want. We'll just stay home. Oh, Bogey's out? Oh, we're helping off that guy.
Poor Eric Pascal.
It don't even matter who. Oh, man. Look, man.
Go on.
I really believed in Utah's lineup versatility, and they have somehow found a way to be in the same position they were last year at this time, where it's like, hey, you're four. We're not guarding him. Sorry, Rudy. Sorry, Pascal. Got Daniel House out there.
We're going to get the full Utah breakdown for you one of these days. It's fine. Man.
3-D or a 3-C player?
3-C player?
Now, we got to talk about that. Y'all just be taking people that are tall and have an okay shot and say, 3-D. No. No, it's not 3-D if the team is okay with the 3 and attacking on the other end. I almost said a thing.
They want the clean rating. You hate to see it.
Hey, let me tell you about Rudy Gobert, all right?
Go on. You have something you want to get off your chest?
What happened? Thought we were in a break.
Sorry. That was the ad read spot. My bad. I didn't know. That's what we were going. Let's close this out with some Boston talk, shall we?
What's there to talk about? Robert Williams is hurt.
Well, that is a thing for us to talk about. He has a torn meniscus, out indefinitely. Reports are that he will have surgery on said torn meniscus. We don't know which surgery option he's going to go with, if it's going to be the shorter one or the, I would imagine, like a full repair, but that would have him out for the year. My assumption would be that it's going to be the lesser surgery, in terms of like the time frame, and he'll be back at some point during the playoffs. But let's frame discussion there. Like, how much does his loss hurt, especially on defense?
I think it hurts them on both ends of the floor, just with how he has grown as a rim protector, as he's grown into switch big adjacent, as he's grown as a roller. I think they just had a really good chemistry with that lineup. Now, here's the question is, how much do you believe in Daniel Theis and what he can add value-wise to that team defensively as a screener? You're probably not getting Robert Williams, but there's a level of production you're going to get there. And does that soften the blow a little bit?
I think I'm more concerned. I mean, obviously, you're getting worse when you're replacing Robert Williams with Daniel Theis. Like, Robert Williams is just a better player. I think I'm more concerned about what this means for the offense than I am about what it means for the defense. I don't know if that classifies as a hot take.
No, it's not a hot take, but let me know where you're at, because I'm going to counter with, that's a ball mover. Like, he doesn't have the same force, but he's going to move the ball, handoff, screen, roll.
He is. Like, I don't know if he scares teams as a roller the way that Robert Williams does.
Oh, no. He doesn't have the force nearly as far as gravity goes. But are you going to get more rolls from Tyson one possession or Robert Williams?
Probably Ty's. He'll roll and do the seal thing. So you can still get stuff out of him.
So that's where I guess it depends on, do you believe in his ability to be more of a connector with some of the handoff stuff, or is Williams' roles more important?
I feel like the roles are more important, and because he can roll and can get downhill, like, it helps open up the other stuff in him. Because, again, they do run a lot of stuff with him above the break and with the handoffs. And I think Tyson will be able to replicate a lot of the handoff stuff in particular. But even then, if it's a handoff and he's rolling, like, I'm not collapsing to the same degree than I would if it's Robert Williams.
Al Horford at the five lineup, Sam?
We about to see it. That's honestly what I want to keep an eye on, too. Like, because Al Horford has had himself one heck of a workload this year. And we're approaching playoff time now. And now Robert Williams is down. Like, I would hope if I'm Boston, like, heading in, like, okay, we're going to scale up a little bit with Robert Williams. And now you're moving from the table. It's going to be a lot of Tyson, a lot of Horford. And I wonder, like, how Horford is going to hold up.
Let me check their ages real quick.
That's a deep cut. I haven't heard that in a while. Been riding the big agenda train.
Oh, that thing is gold.
We're going back to season one now. This is some tough stuff.
Siakam would disagree with your Daniel takes, by the way. Dumped all over that man's head. Oh, sorry, Canada.
Yep. Not sorry, Canada. Pascal Siakam, very good at the basketball.
I apologize to Pascal. I'll throw that out there publicly in audio format. I did it on social media, and Canada said, you got to give him an all NBA vote. And I just laughed because it's like, ha, I don't have one. But no, I firmly was in the question mark areas. Does he have another ceiling, or is he just going to be this? And he does. So salute to him.
40 and 13 against Boston. Hard to sneeze at that. But aside from the Robert Williams thing, which is a pretty big note to have, like, Boston just absolutely blitzed Minnesota on Sunday. Touched on that a little bit earlier. The Robert Williams injury just sucks. One, Robert Williams is having a good year, a very good year, and you hate when young guys get hurt. But also, like, my first question heading to this pod was going to be like, hey, is Boston your favorite in the East right now?
No. Anyone saying they have a favorite in the East is lying to you. That's going to be a mess. We can be honest with each other. The difference between the 1-4 seed is a half a game. That's going to be a fun playoffs. One of those four teams is coming out. I will say that. But it's going to be intriguing.
Brooklyn slander? Wow.
Not Brooklyn slander. I'd have more Brooklyn Heat if they were in the sixth seed. I just think they're too far back right now.
Okay.
Although I'm sure Brooklyn fans are just hoping they can get to the Philly matchup. And then all bets will be off for them.
Man, just the prospect of one of those teams losing in the first round is, man, that's a lot. That's a whole lot. But no, while we're on Boston, like, how have you felt about the offense? Like, from a scheme perspective? Because obviously, like, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have been really good. Do you feel like they're doing anything differently?
It's been fun to watch. Marcus Smart has been good initiating the ball. I feel like I've said this before. I don't have any new takes on Boston's offense.
I got you.
They're really good. But I mean, I think process wise, they've done a better job of understanding and playing with focus. You know, it helps when Jason Tatum is playing at this level, not just scoring the ball, but also just quick decisions. You know, I think one of the underrated things on this whole stretch has been catch, decide, attack. And that helps with the ball movement naturally. I think looking to post Jaylen Brown more naturally gives their offense a little bit more movement, a little bit more flow. I just think they have done a better job of looking to play together and use each other skill set wise. And now you see Tatum able to drive and kick more as opposed to hold, wait, now I'm driving, or it's a pull up. And also the defense just helps them just play in more of a flow. There's more transition opportunities. So even if you don't get an easy one, you can get a rebound or you can flow into secondary. And now you have more of that natural movement as opposed to just being in the half court and having to execute in that way all the time, which I think has been important for them. So there's just been more of a mindset there. I think Marcus Smart's aggression has really helped. Not even just because it's just a different dynamic. You know, defense may be treating him the same, but if he's initiating now, you don't know if he's going to drive and transition or if he's going to pass and screen or cut. Just makes you think a little bit more.
I got you. While we are still here, I had a Boston question for you. Because we talked about, obviously, Robert Williams is going to be out for a while. We talked about Daniel Tice's role likely going up because of that. What do you think the likelihood is of Boston basically zagging instead of zigging? And we just get more Derek White. Like, do you start Daniel Tice? Do you start Derek White? Like, where do you go from that? We didn't really get a tail in this Monday night game against Toronto because they rested just about everyone.
I don't think you start Derek White right now. I think you probably give him more playing time, maybe more finishing minutes, maybe more minutes with the starters, that kind of thing. I would assume they go Grant Williams, Al Horford, but I've been wrong before. So I don't know if you disrupt it that much because now what's your bench look like? You know, and that's the important thing rotation-wise. We got to at least have a set mindset until we need to go there. So I wouldn't be surprised if Derek White starts game 3 of the NBA playoffs is a tweet that happens. But I don't see it from the jump.
Okay. All right. I don't have any other Boston thoughts.
Oh, you don't?
I do not. I just want Robert Williams III to get better. That's all.
Are you preparing the reverse Chicago victory lap?
The reverse Chicago? No, because like
I've seen some baby steps. You're setting up the Euro. I've seen it.
I'm not setting up
the Euro. I've seen it. Who thought this would have Wolves potential? Don't think I didn't see it. I'm seeing the
I've already admitted on the podcast I was wrong about the team. Like, they are sliding into this seeding range because of the injuries. Like, I've already acknowledged, like, they've been better than I expected. I will say, like, the tweet itself is funny because this was after – I want to say they beat Denver back in November, and Denver was missing a bunch of players, which theme of the season for Denver, but whatever. And then that's when that tweet came out. And I remember quote tweeting it then. I was like, okay, I get it. Like, talk it all, especially because Chicago was, I think they were the one seed at that point. And I was like, okay, I get this, but like, I don't know if this is the time to drop that tweet just because they beat a good team, but it was the good team without just about everyone at that point. And so now we zoom out, and their record against like the top 3 seeds in each conference is awful. And now they're sliding. So like that in particular, I'm just like, okay, that's kind of funny. That's at least a little bit funny. But the Bulls as a whole, no, I've been wrong. Like, that's fine. I'll acknowledge that. That's cool.
Where are you at with Milwaukee right now?
Thought we were going to...
Looked at the show sheet, did not see Bucks on there. Whole lot of contender check. Let me scroll up real quick. Nope, not on there. How do you feel about them? Is this general championship malaise? Is this integrating Brooke back in, or do we have an issue?
I don't want to say malaise. Like, I think it's a little bit of incorporating Brook in, though he's looked pretty good defensively already, which I think is a positive. I still don't have a firm handle of what he's doing on offense yet. So we'll see. But, like, it's also been hard for me to gauge because they're incorporating him, but, like, since he's been back, like, Giannis has missed some time. Drew's missed some time. Like, Drew was out for the Memphis game, in which Memphis absolutely blitzed Milwaukee. On a related note, shout out D'Anthony Melton. That guy is freaking good. I just want to throw that out there. Anyway. What?
Melting my brain with those weak side rotations.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Anyway. Drew's missed time. Giannis has missed time. Chris has also missed time. So, like, they're incorporating while also having their key pieces. Like, I just want to see them together consistently before I go there. But Brook being back, I've already seen them go to more drop, and the defense has been a little bit more solid in that regard, walling off the paint. So I'm not super concerned.
How many people are going to just notice Giannis's passing improving in a couple weeks?
I feel like my real answer would get me in trouble. So I would just say probably a lot of people.
Because in that blowout loss to Memphis, this man threw just two dimes to Brooke Lopez in the first 5 minutes. And that's where I'm like, okay, maybe Milwaukee's just kind of chilling right now.
Yeah, like, I don't think they're concerned, which should probably worry the other teams at least.
If they were the one seed and this was 7 years ago, we'd be saying, do they think they have an on button?
Oh man, don't we
all time worst narrative of all time. I can't stand it. This team thinks it has a switch.
All it is in Milwaukee is one game behind Miami for the one seed.
Oh, by the way, since we're flowing into free throws, you did say we would have a new number one seed. Were you correct? Looks like Miami's still on top.
I mean, technically,
Philly got up there. It counts. All right, that's fine.
I mean, you know, the standings changed back on Monday.
Okay. Who deserves to be in the MVP conversation more, Jason Tatum or Devin Booker?
See, this is funny because my question for you was going to be, who would you rather start your franchise with, Jason Tatum or Devin Booker? I'm glad that we're here. like, I would probably lean Booker. Honestly, like, it's hard to look past the start for not just Tatum, because I feel like generally Tatum played well. It just couldn't knock down shots. Would hurt, but like, you can't ignore that. Plus, Boston also starting at like 11. Like, it adds to the coolness of them making this second half surge. But you compare that to what Phoenix has been able to do all year long. Like, I would probably have Booker slightly ahead.
So, you think Booker's in the MVP conversation?
I feel like we had this conversation on Friday. Like, I'm cool with having Booker like fourth or fifth. That's fine.
But not nowhere near the top three, right?
I would not. I feel like I'm getting set up. It's fine, though. I wouldn't have him in my top three right now.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. March 25th, Kendrick Perkins. I believe over the last month, Devin Booker has entered into the MVP conversation, .. But to say that he has leaped Embiid and Jokic, who has been the front runners for the entire season, is crazy to me, .! Both Embiid and Jokic still smashing the gas. Don't mind me, though, and carry on, ..
Not bad, not bad.
The Perkis Duncan.
Nope. Oh, God, I hate that. Don't. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I got a question for you.
What's up?
What are you more worried about, Miami's ability to create shots or Miami's ability to make shots?
Probably their ability to create shots. Hey, can I have a quick Miami point?
I mean, we only had an 18-minute segment on them.
Yeah, you're right. But what the heck is going on with their defense? That's not, that's kind of, that's, the offense is easy to point to. because that's kind of been a frustrating thing for me all year long and stuff. But like, nearly a 120 defensive rating during that four-game losing streak before they snapped against Sacramento. Again, I haven't watched that game yet, but even then, you snapped the streak against Sacramento. I don't know if that solves the major problems for you, or I don't know if that answers the major questions for you.
I still don't think you want to see that team defensively in the playoffs.
You don't.
I mean, conceptually, that's a lot of but those four guys, just in general. I think just going back to the Knicks game, RJ Barrett comes off a double drag. He starts with PJ Tucker on him, gets Lowry on him, then gets Bam on him, and then Jimmy's on the weak side. And it's like, all right, I get it.
Yeah.
That's not a lot of fun to deal with. And then it's like, okay, sweet. So they have Duncan or Hero out there. You want to attack them. We're going to switch and double. And now guess who the people closing out are? It's one of Bam, Lowry, Jimmy, or PJ Tucker. So I'll wait till game one. They get blasted, take an L.
All right. I got you. I'll just say, like, it's been, like, during that stretch, very concerning what the defense looked like. And just zooming out, like, I've been slightly underwhelmed with Kyle Lowry defensively this year.
No seasoning. I like it. Okay.
that's a good shot. But no, like, you remove the charges. I mean, you can't remove the charges, but like, beyond that, it's like he hasn't been asked out on switches. The screen navigation hasn't been great. Like, heading into the year, we talked about this on the preview pod and stuff. I was like, okay, cool. The Heat don't have Goran Dragic and Kendrick Nunn anymore. They have Kyle Lowry at the point of attack. They'll finally be able to play drop. Bam doesn't have to switch all the time. And now I watch these games, it's like, they probably need to switch with Lowry on the floor.
I think he's the X factor for Miami.
Yeah.
I think he's the ceiling raiser.
Yeah. And to your earlier point, like, the hope is that he's just kind of biding his time, setting the table, getting the feel for guys, getting guys more comfortable, and then he's going to be ready to ramp up once the postseason hits. And then if he does do that, a lot of the comments that I've made throughout this season are going to look foolish. It's like, okay, he ramped it up. This is what Miami traded for him for. Very cool. But, like, just defensively in particular, I'm just like, I was expecting a little bit more. Like, the Heat are still a very scheme-versatile group. But, like, I thought drop would be a bigger piece of their puzzle this year, and it hasn't been. And part of that has been because Lowry just hasn't been the same guy.
I feel you. It is March 28th. The Blazers are playing the Thunder. It's 93-83. There are 8 players that have double figures so far. There's 9 minutes left in this fourth quarter. Can you name 4 of them?
4 of the players that have double figure points in this game.
Yep, combined, either team. Just need 4.
Thunder Blazers. Okay. Oh, this is going to be tough. I know Trey Mann is out, if I'm not mistaken.
This is going to be a good test for the young connoisseur. I know he's going to watch this with excitement tomorrow.
You joke, but I'm going to turn this on.
Oh, no, that wasn't a joke. This is absolutely your ministry. What do you mean?
Oh, goodness. Don't do this. Shoot, I don't know, man. It's almost midnight. I don't know. I'm not about to.
Oh, you tapped on the question. I love it.
We ain't doing this. I'll check the NBA app. We can read it on pod. We can cap it right there. We've talked about 12 different teams today. I am not about to do.
I got him. This is like Tim's playing the young guys for the Knicks.
I would just concede on this one. No. What? Let's see what's going on here. All right. We got Aaron Wiggins. We got Isaiah Roby. Tao Maledon with 11-9. We love to see it.
Who?
Oh, we're not doing this. Olivier Saar has 10. Very cool. Brandon Williams, Drew Eubanks, Keon Johnson, and Ben McLemore How about it? Ben McLemore 25 off the bench. And Brent, when are we going to have the Brent? You know what? We need to have the Brandon Williams discussion at some point.
See, I told you he'd get excited here, folks.
Okay.
Didn't take much. Did not take much.
This is incredibly on brand. I hate it.
That's why we do the things we do. Who do you trust more in the playoffs, Vucevic or Rudy Gobert?
I feel like I should be flipping this to you. Probably Gobert. Would you go Vooch?
I couldn't hear it.
Yeah, that's all I need to hear.
I don't know what happened.
Seems like a firm yes.
I'm not sure. How did it feel to be free from getting packed up on Twitter this weekend?
Pretty cool, you know? It would appear like if you just don't tweet opinions, you're good to go. Which goes against the nature of Twitter, so I don't know how I feel about that. But, you know, nice change of pace. I got to get a cancer tweet off this morning. That was cool.
Chicago or Utah? Who you trust more?
Really hammering this up. Chicago.
Oh, wow. I don't know what to do with that.
I've been Caruso pilled. Watching him fly around against Cleveland, that did it. He's back.
Okay. All right. What scenario would you just be okay if they don't foul up three?
if the offensive team doesn't have a timeout and there is less than a second left of game time, if they make the heave, they make the heave.
So is your worst case scenario just aesthetically a team that is up to not fouling and the other team just has their best player catch the ball, dribble for 15 seconds and hit a three?
What is this line of questioning? I don't know how I feel about this. I'm sorry, man. I'm watching the end of that Connecticut NC State game and I'm just like, bro, just the smoothest flare in the corner too. But I'm just like, bro, y'all had plenty of time to foul. Like they ran a whole set. Like you're up three. Hack them. It's okay.
You think UConn wins it all?
No, like I'm going to stick with the South Carolina pick, but I am here for Stanford UConn though. I will say that. I'll be ready to get some takes off Davey if they're able to pull that off.
But what if they're not?
Then, you know, if they aren't able to pull that off, then go on down the route for the team in Columbia SC. And
you are not down for a Louisville Stanford championship. Is that what you're telling me?
Not my ministry, but I'm not gonna poo-poo it for anyone else.
All right, that seems like a good place to end.
Oh, man, I'll let the people have it. I will come through with some free throws for you on Thursday. Since you want to.
Oh, yeah. You had free throws. When you had a guest, you had free throws. But I show up to work. I clock in. Ain't no free throws in sight. We're not going to the line. We're not in the bonus. We're just moving the ball. I see. All right.
You see, you're anti-foul of three, so, you know, I couldn't put you on the line is what happened.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Dunker Spot. You can find... I forgot the thing. Close it out.
please give us 5 stars, leave a review, subscribe to us if you have not already. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
I Am Legend was a sad movie.